Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Ryan Hayes with Access Radio Live. Today is Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. Before we get started, I like to thank our sponsors. Sponsor StreamSmart. StreamSmart is a revolutionary new device that allows you unlimited access to movies, TV shows, sports, preview events, music, and live streams, all in HD. Looking for a classic film or a movie that's currently in theaters? They're all available on your StreamSmart receiver. No more waiting for TV programs to show up on Netflix. Now you can get every episode of every show. Every episode of every show. No more paying for events like UFC, boxing, or WWE. Stream them all live in HD with StreamSmart. Cancel your NFL ticket, your Red Zone, your NBA League Pass, your MLB Network, and NHL Center Ice. They're all free in HD with your StreamSmart receiver. StreamSmart, where smart people go for entertainment. Quality Refrigeration Concepts. Quality Refrigeration is now QRC, specializing in HVAC. Their mission is to perform for their customers the highest level of quality heating and air services at a fair market and competitive price. To ensure the longevity of their company through repeat referral and business achieved by customer satisfaction. To deliver excellent customer service in all areas, including timeliness, attention to detail, and service-minded attitudes. Garden of Life. Garden of Life is empowering extraordinary health. Their products are all USDA organic. Their products are designed to let you take control of your own health. They believe in premium nutrition that goes beyond the ordinary. Your health is a gift, and extraordinary health is a goal worth pursuing for both you and your family. I would never endorse a product that I haven't taken myself. I've taken Garden of Life supplements. Steve Montgomery, UFC middleweight, fighting on the undercard of the Ronda Rousey card against Holly Holm. He takes it. Colby Covington, two-time All-American from Oregon State, who's in the UFC as a welterweight. He takes it. Will Brooks, lightweight in Bellator. He takes it. This is good stuff. You guys should go out and get it. Now, want to tell you guys a little bit about what happened last weekend. For those of you all who are actively involved in the sport of wrestling on college level, high school level, if you're involved in USA Wrestling, AAU Wrestling, whatever it is, I would say that you all heard about the tournament called the Super 32. The tournament started out about 17 years ago that probably had about 200 kids total. Now it have over a couple thousand kids show up. And it's a very, very big tournament where all the top ranked high school wrestlers from around the country participate. I went and I had two wrestlers personally that I helped coach in it. And I also saw, you know, the other wrestlers, and I'm going to tell you guys, I've never seen such competitiveness in one tournament. All these guys were going at it, you know, battling for a Super 32 belt, which is a pretty good belt. My guest today has won this tournament not once, not twice, but three times. He wrestled there at 132 pounds. He's a rising senior at Hilton Central High School in the Rochester area of New York. Yanni DeHakma Mahales, hard name to pronounce. Pretty sure he's had other people not pronounce it right, but I'm doing my best. We're just going to say Yanni D is what people normally call him by, and we're getting ready to have him on. So I'm going to stop talking and let's start the show. Yanni Dehakamales. How you doing, man?
I'm good, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, no problem. This is a pretty cool opportunity. Young Live Radio.
Hey, it's pretty good. You got people listening, man. They were retweeting and tweeting the heck out of it. So I'll just start off, man. That's what I ask everybody is, you know, what's your background in wrestling and how'd you get started?
So my dad wrestled in high school and, you know, through college. And, you know, he wasn't like an extraordinary wrestler or anything, but he learned a lot of like the, you know, character traits of like being tough and, you know, being determined and disciplined. And he wanted me to have those traits growing up. So he got me involved in the sport and, you know, I liked it and I was good at it. So I just kind of, I kept doing it. I really love it now. So
that's cool. Well, tell me a little bit about your family in general.
All right, so, you know, my last name is pretty Greek, you know, Diakomahalis. So my dad was actually born in Greece, and he moved here when he was 5 years old. So, like, my whole dad's family speaks Greek. And, you know, my hard work's always been kind of a thing with my dad because my grandpa, like, came here and didn't really have anything. He started his own business and became really successful. And, you know, it's just a seafood business. Like, a lot of people probably wouldn't know about it. But, you know, my grandpa started with basically nothing. You know, he lived on dirt floors, and he worked in life, and he earned, you know, the money he makes. Now my family isn't super wealthy, but my family lives well. And so my dad's, you know, just kind of grown up around hard work, so he always likes to have that as an idea for me to follow.
That's cool. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what makes you like wrestling?
You know, there's a lot of individuality in it. There's no one who you can rely on to make you successful, and there's no one who can pull you down. It's just like you out there doing what you do. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of dependent on how hard you work, and you put in whatever you put in is the output. There's nothing stopping you. There's no natural athleticism you need or natural ability. It's all the work you put in. It's almost entirely work based on work. So you can earn as good as success as you want, or you can, you know, work as little as you want and never have the success, because it's not about natural gifts. It's about the ability to push yourself.
You, when you started wrestling, about what age were you?
I was, you know, 6 years old, but I mean, no one's really serious at that age. You know, kids always just practice and they go to their regular practice and go home and that's it. I think, you know, I really started getting serious and considering doing this for the rest of my life around, you know, 9, 10 years old was when my training really, really got serious. And, you know, I started thinking about like state titles and, you know, wrestling in college and wrestling at the Olympics and stuff like that.
When, at what point that you start to know that, you know what, I can really be good at this?
You know, I always had some success when I was younger. I think the first time that, like, I actually became a really good wrestler, or at least I considered myself successful, was around 7th grade. You know, I started going to some of those big middle school tournaments. You know, I won little middle school tournaments here and there. In 8th grade, I won Super 32 middle school. So I think that was kind of the point where me and my dad kind of sat down and we were like, all right, you can be really good if you put the work in. And, you know, I always worked really hard, but I think that was kind of the first time I saw the work start to click for me at, a national scene.
Well, you are a you're a three-time Super 32 champion. You're a UWW cadet world champion. You've been in the final of Flow Nationals three times. My question is it like, these are like tough tournaments. Like what's like a typical, how many times do you train a day just to get ready for this kind of stuff?
If I had a tournament, like a tournament of Super 32 caliber or worlds, I'd be training, you know, probably every day leading into it. And, you know, I still take recovery and, you know, making sure I stay healthy into account, but really my training really picks up the 2 weeks leading into it. And, you know, I hit my stride leading into that tournament. so that, you know, by the time the day of wrestling comes, I'm ready to go.
I read online that you committed to wrestle at Cornell. For those of you all that don't know much about Cornell, Cornell has is the home of Cal Dake, four-time national champion. They won the national championship in four different weight classes. It's home to a good wrestler, Gabe Dean. What made you decide to go there?
A lot of things attracted me to Cornell. You know, it's a great school, and it can set me up for a really great future, you know, in case wrestling wanted to get me as far as I'd like it to. And, you know, those, like, I've been in that room before. I've seen how those guys train. There's a certain level of, like, self-motivation. You know, there's not the coach riding them saying, you guys got to do this, you guys got to do this, you guys got to do this. It's them wanting to do it. It's them wanting to be good because they love what they do. And, you know, I kind of wanted that, like, I wanted that where all the guys around me want to be national champs, and they're all doing it because they're pushing themselves. You know, Kyle Dake and Gabe Dean are two classic examples of guys who don't have a lot of natural ability, and they just work really hard, and they outwork everyone they wrestle. And I want to be in that environment. Like, I want to be surrounded by guys like that, because those are the kind of guys who are going to do great things in wrestling and in life in general.
So that
was a really big attractive point for me.
Now, And of course, that's a good pick. Now, a lot of people, they'll have a high school team that they'll practice with and wrestle for, and then during the spring, they'll have like a club team. Are your high school coaches your coaches 24/7, or do you have a club team that you go to? Tell me a little bit about that, how that works.
I give my dad so much credit. If it wasn't for my dad, I wouldn't know anything about wrestling. Every single move, situation that I'm aware of, that I've learned about, my dad's taught me. And, you know, he's trained me since I was 6 years old, and he still coaches me now. Even during the high school season, we'll hold practices after our regular high school practice, and he'll still work with me. You know, there's a bunch of kids who I train with who are really good, too. You know, Louis Dupre, Frankie Gissendan are nationally ranked guys. A bunch of guys I train with are state placers. And my dad is... I like to credit him as really the main reason why I have success. You know, he cares so much about me and about the kids who I train with, and, you know, he's really dedicated to us. And, you know, he always says it, and he's backed it up, that he would do anything to help us, you know, to help us. If we needed something from him, he would have no problem doing it. And so I like to give my dad a lot of credit. Like, I credit him as the biggest reason why I have success, you know, as a wrestler.
And that's great. Tell me a little bit about Hilton Central High School. How are you guys as a team, and what are some of the other guys on there that you train with? Tell me a little bit about those guys.
So we might not be overly nationally relevant, but we're solid in New York. You know, we've won a state tournament title the past 2 years, and we have the kind of team where we have a lot of really good wrestlers, and we have some not as good wrestlers. And, you know, our dual meet team's always really good. You know, we're always top 15 in the state. You know, 2 years ago, we were number three in the state. And, you know, we've got a lot of studs in our lineup. You know, we got Louis Dupre, who just made the Super 32 finals. You know, he's a top 10 kid in the country. Austin Hertel is a state placer as a sophomore in high school. You know, so those are just guys who train with me. Louis got a younger brother, Sam, who's a freshman this year. My younger brother's had a lot of middle school success. He'll be in our lineup this year. You know, Mike Spallina, another kid in our lineup who's a junior, he's one round from placing last year. So we have a lot of guys who can really be successful. And, you know, it really helps our team, you know, have the success that we've had in New York.
Tell me a little bit about how wrestling works up in New York. In the state of North Carolina, our state tournament where I coach at is broke down into four divisions. Of course, you got 4A being your biggest school, then it drops 3A, 2A, and 1A. And there's a state tournament for each division. Now, how does it work in New York? Is it just all schools? Like, how do you qualify? Is there a sectional for it, then a regional, a district? Tell me a little bit about how that works up there.
So New York's divided into 11 sections, and then there's a private school and a Catholic school section. Except in New York Division 1, there's no Section 7. And in New York Division 2, which is the other one. There's no Catholic school section. So Division I's the larger schools, and, you know, I think it's over 1,000. And then Division II is the smaller schools, which is less than 1,000 in your school. And, you know, there's two state champs in Division I. There's one state champ Division I, a state champ Division II. And you would have to go through, you know, your Class A sectional tournament, which might be, you know, your Class A, Class AA in Division I, and then Class, you know, B, Class BB in Division II. And then you have the state qualifier, which would be, you know, your Section 5 tournament, your Section 7 tournament, or whatever. And then you have Division I state tournament, or you have the Division II state tournament. And, you know, you have two state champs, and that's it.
In this tournament, how have you done? Like, how many times have you won a state championship in New York?
I'm a three-time state champ. In New York, you can wrestle high school as in 7th and 8th grade. So I didn't make the state tournament as a 7th grader. As an 8th grader, as a freshman, and as a sophomore, I won state title. So as of now, I'm a three-time state champ.
That's pretty sick. So you are a rising junior then, correct?
Yeah. So I have two more state tournaments that I'm eligible for.
That's what threw me off at the beginning of the show. You're a three-time Flow National finalist, and I kind of figured you would have probably been a three-time state champion because of your success. So I just thought you was going to be like a rising senior, but you won that first state title in 8th grade, so that kind of threw me off. So you were a beast early. Tell me this: when did you decide that you want to start doing all these national events that you participate in?
Well, it started kind of at a young age, you know. Once I became good relative to New York State, my dad immediately decided that, you know, I needed to start taking some more losses. So we went to, you know, we tried to find national tournaments. We'd look up on, you know, the little Pennsylvania youth forums when we were younger, what tournaments were nationally relevant, and we would go to them. And then just as I got older, we started hearing about these tournaments like Super 32 and Flow Nationals and the Cadet World Team Trials and, you know, Fargo. And once I was old enough, we started going to them. And my dad always was trying to seek out competition for us. So, and, you know, I like getting that competition. I like, you know, fighting with the best kids in the country. So, you know, it kind of started at a young age, but part of it was just kind of like a competitive spirit that kind of exists throughout my family.
When you're in these tough, you know, especially these world and nationally recognized tournaments, how do you handle the pressure going in there? Because it almost seems like the more I research between that 126, 132 weight class, it's always the same kids that you see that are dominant, such as your Dayton Fixes and your Nick Sirianos, and then there's you, and stuff like that. Tell me a little bit about, you know, about having the pressure of seeing these people who might have beat you a month ago, and then you having to wrestle them now.
You know, it's really exciting for me. Like, it gets boring wrestling kids who aren't good wrestlers. You know, I want to wrestle the best guys in the country. You know, it's exciting when I get to wrestle guys like Dayton or Nick Soriano. You know, I mean, I might be friends with those guys. You know, we might know each other, but it's exciting. It's fun for me. Like, we're challenging each other, and we're seeing, you know, who's been putting in more work and who's better. And it's exciting for me to wrestle the best guys in the country. You know, some people feel the pressure and it weighs them down, but I like it. It's exciting. Like, being in high-pressure situations excites me. I wish I was in pressure situations all the time. You know, I really, like, it's thrilling to me being in competition with guys like that. You know, I really, that's why I love wrestling, is being able to compete with the best guys in the country. It's exciting for me.
When you made it to the Super 32 finals and you won it for like the third time, did you expect to win it by pinfall, being everybody in the finals always tough wrestlers? They're hard to pin.
I always go out there with the confidence that, you know, there's no reason I shouldn't be able to win a match. I didn't expect to, you know, walk out there and pin my kid in a minute and a half, but I mean, I guess when I go out there to wrestle, I go out there to compete as hard as I can for 6 minutes. So if that means I pin you in a minute and a half, then that's what happens. If it means that you beat me, then I'm not good enough yet. So I guess I don't expect anything, but I come in with a confidence level that's, know, my mentality is there's no reason I shouldn't win. I've worked just as hard as this guy, if not harder. And, you know, I'm here too. You know, it's not the first round of some tournament. It's the Super 32 Finals. And he's just as good as I am. So there's no reason I shouldn't be able to walk out there and, you know, wrestle hard. And maybe I do pin him. Maybe I don't. But I guess there's a certain level of confidence I have where it's like, I got here. I earned my way here. So there's no reason I shouldn't expect to win now.
Oh, for sure, certainly. What do you find the most challenging about wrestling?
There's always mental tests. And, you know, my dad's always explained this to the kids we work out with. Sometimes there are little things you might not notice. Sometimes it's situations where you're up by a point or you're down by a point. Or, you know, you got to keep your hands locked to ride a kid out to win a match. Or you got to finish a shot. And there's always little mental barriers that you just got to push through. And, you know, like there's just recently a flow coverage about Isaiah Martinez where he says every day he pushed his breaking point out a little bit further. A little bit further every day. So wrestling's one of those sports where you are always at some point you're going to hit your breaking point. And it's all about how far you can push your breaking point so that you that guy breaks before you do. So there's always, you know, there's always going to be challenges where you're going to want to give up or you're going to want to quit or you're going to want to be done. But you got to push through it and you got to say, no, I'm here because I work hard and I'm willing to do this. So, you know, there's always mental blocks where your body's going to say no, but you have to just push through it.
Is there anything that's kind of ever made you nervous? Like before stepping out there, is there anything that makes you nervous?
Honestly, I don't really get nervous often. I mean, it's happened to me when I was younger, but I've just kind of learned from competing is so much that, you know, nothing's going to happen. Win or lose, you know, if I wrestle hard and I compete, you know, I'm still going to go home and have a family. My family's still going to love me. I'm still going to have all my friends, you know. And as long as I wrestle hard, if I empty the tank and that guy beats me, that just tells me I need to get better and that, you know, I'm not good enough. So my mentality has always been just go out there and wrestle hard and whatever happens, happens. If I lose a match, I wasn't good enough. But if I lose a match because I didn't wrestle hard, it's different. But I don't know. I just go out there and wrestle hard and let the match unfold, you know. Whoever's better that day is going to win.
For sure. You know, what I like about watching guys like you wrestle and Dayton Fix is that you all have won some and you've lost some, and it's how you guys handle losing. You know, I was talking to Dayton about this when I had him on last week. Is that I always see wrestlers when they lose a match, they just storm off the mat, fly off the deep end, whatever they got in their hands, they're throwing it. And I've never seen that out of you. And it was like what I was telling Dayton was, now it could be you may go back in the locker room and you might start turning stuff over, but you don't show it publicly. And I saw that in Dayton Fix and what was probably his worst Super 32 performance ever, but he still handled it like a true professional.
So, you know, what's actually interesting was I talked to Mr. Fix about that, just, you know, making sure like Dayton was all right, whatever. And my dad's always said it to me and he said it too. And it's just kind of a thing. If you compete as much as guys like me and Dayton do, you can't help but lose here and there. You know, if you wrestle 1,000 matches, you're probably going to lose one or two of them just from random chance, or maybe you're just not good enough. So, you know, I get upset, and I try not to let people see that I'm upset because it's kind of a similar thing to being tired. Like, you don't want to show weakness. You don't want to show guys that, you know, you're mentally breaking or that you're upset. You just want to handle it like a mature person, a mature adult, and, you know, go be upset behind the curtain where no one can see you. You know, that doesn't mean you need to have a total meltdown every time you lose, but you just have to handle it maturely. And, you know, if you've wrestled, I mean, I've wrestled tons and hundreds and thousands of matches in my entire life, and I've lost hundreds and thousands of matches in my entire life. So I've learned how to handle it and not make a scene and, you know, not be obnoxious about it. And, you know, I try and learn from it. You know, I try and sit down and think what went wrong. Why did I lose that match? And, you know, I take it into practice and I say, I need to get better at these things, or I need to work harder, or I need to get stronger. I need to become a better wrestler. But I try and take something out of the match, not just, you know, melt down because I lost.
Did you know anything about this Luke Karam kid? Have you wrestled him? And, you know, how did you do against him if you did?
Actually, I've wrestled Luke. He was one of those kids who was good when we were young. And, you know, when we were younger, he used to beat me. You know, he was older. But we wrestled in the last year, I want to say two times, maybe one time. I texted him one time in a freestyle tournament as a sophomore, and then I think he beat me when I was a freshman. And then as a sophomore, I beat him in Super 32. So I think I'm winning, you know, since high school has began 2-1 in the series. But Luke's always been a really competitive wrestler. He's always been really tough, and he's been awkward for kids to wrestle. So, you know, I knew he was going to be a really tough kid, you know, for Dayton, and I knew he was going to be a really competitive guy. And, you know, he's the kind of kid who gives people headaches because he's a strange person to wrestle against. So, you know, I've known about Luke. I've wrestled him three times, I want to say, since high school started, and I've won the last two. But he's always given people fits like that who are really good wrestlers, but maybe he's just got a weird way to approach them.
You know what made me upset the most is that as I'm watching this match take place in front of me, you know, no matter who won, it was one of the best matches. Is that I'm walking by and I'm hearing multiple people saying, "Oh my God, like I'm glad that Dayton Fix lost. He gets too much hype, and this and that." Yeah, it kind of upset me because, you know, this kid works his butt off to be at the level that he's at. You work your butt off to be at the level that you're at. How do you handle people that are like that?
You know, I can see the frustration in that. Like, I know Dayton personally, and I know he works just as hard as anybody. He's explained this to me since I was a really young kid. As you get success, there's just going to be people who want to see you fall. It's not that they don't like you or that, you know, they think you're a bad person. It's just some people don't like the idea of success. There are going to be people who are really happy for you, and they really want to see you succeed. And, you know, those people are your friends. But then there's always going to be people, if you're successful, who are going to want to see you be unsuccessful. So I just try and, you know, if people root against me, I'm just going to say, you know, if you want to root against me, that's fine. I don't really care. And, you know, I know it's frustrating to hear people say, "Oh, I'm glad he lost," because that's not fair of you to say. You don't know what they've done to get to, you don't know what they've done to earn that success. You don't know what they've done to earn that hype. But the way I see it, they're just people who want to start problems and start issues and, you know, see me fail. And I just have to ignore those people because they're poisonous. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to help me reach my goals. They don't want to help Dayton Fix reach his goals. So you just have to tune those people out. You know, there's always going to be people like that who don't want to see you succeed, and you just have to try and find a way to not let them get to you.
So I'm pretty sure that you've been booed a couple of times, and so you're just, how are you just able to tune it out when it's, you know, when it's there live and, you know, you do something or you take somebody down and everybody starts booing you? How is it that you handle that part?
I'm going to be honest. I don't really get booed a lot. There's a lot more people who are just kind of, I mean, it happens. You know, people have probably booed me when I've wrestled, and I just try and tune that out, you know. Maybe I've gotten lucky, but I'm sure I've gotten lucky. I can guarantee I've gotten lucky at matches before. And, you know, I just try to think, you know, all right, maybe I got lucky that time. Maybe I got lucky because I deserve to get lucky. Who knows? Maybe I just fell my way that time. But, I don't know, I find it unnecessary to boo people. But whatever. You know, same thing. You just got to think, you know, they don't want to see me succeed. Some people are just upset. You know, I'm sure if someone I knew got, you know, really screwed on a call, I might be upset about it too. So the way I see it, there's just people who are upset because the outcome didn't go the way they wanted to go. And you just have to be able to understand that they're just upset. They're just upset, and that's it. And you just have to look at it like they're upset, and you won the match, and whether you deserve to win or not, it happened, and there's nothing you can do about it now. Maybe you deserve to lose that match. Maybe you should have lost. But at that point, there's nothing you can do about it now. The match is over.
Speaking of getting screwed out of a call, have you been watching that video that's kind of gone viral around the wrestling world about that pin in a Super 32? The kid was like on the side. What's that?
That was ridiculous. I thought.
So, yeah, so you saw it.
I've seen it. You know, it was on a Tuttle Flow Wrestling for a couple hours. And I thought it was ridiculous. I mean, I get it. Like, refs are human. They make bad calls. But I thought that was a little bit ridiculous. But it's same thing. It happened. You can't do anything about it now. I mean, you can
for
make
sure.
people aware of it. I'm sure something happened to that ref. Maybe he got fired. Maybe he, I don't know, got money off his payroll or something. Who knows? It's kind of a similar situation to getting booed. You can't do anything about it now. It's happened. It's over. You know, you can't rewind time and have the ref uncall the pin. It's happened. But you can't really do anything about it.
You know, the problem is, Yanni, that upsets me is that kid's worked hard. He's paid his $55, which is, you know, to enter the tournament, and he can't get that match back. Now, that referee, I know he continued to ref other matches, but that kid can't get that match back, and that's the only thing that frustrates me is that, you know, are these the way these refs are trained. Like, this guy was, like, on his side. Actually, I had my 113, it was in a tournament. You know, he was a defending state champion. He was wrestling in the second round, and he kind of did almost the guy tried to return him to the mat, and he kind of almost did a standing Granby kind of deal. And he was on his back for not even a half a second, and the ref called a pin. And, you know, I'm just thinking, like, what, you know, how are these refs, like, trained? Are they just trying to get, you know, get through the day? Or are they just, I mean, you ever had a referee, Yanni, that, like, you can just see it's kind of getting to where it's getting ready to get dark, and they just start calling every kind of pin they can find?
Oh, 100%. I know. I 100%. And it's frustrating because, you know, that's part of the job. You can't get – all right, to put it in a more simpler term, you can't get mad about occupational hazards because that's part of the job. You can't, like, as a ref, you can't get frustrated or upset that you're reffing at 9 o'clock because you signed up for that, you know. And
right.
I get it. People get impatient. They want to be done with whatever they're doing. But I guess it's a really big deal to be there too. And it's a really important tournament to a lot of kids. They train really hard for it. And for some people, it's the culmination of their season. And, you know, as a ref, you have a lot of power to take something away from a kid who might have deserved it. So, you know, it's just kind of a universal thing that you need to be really careful with what you do. And I get that people get, you know, anxious and they want to be done, but that's part of the job. You know, you have to stay disciplined. You can't just kind of call whatever you want to call because you want to be done and go home because, you know, you might be taking something away from a kid who really earned it. For all we know, that kid deserved the place. That kid deserved to win that match. Maybe he didn't, but there's no way you'll ever know now because that happened.
Would you consider someone and I don't know if this ever happened to you before, whether it was on a youth level or whether it been on the level that you are now. Let's say you're beating somebody 10-0, and everybody knows who the better wrestler is, but he does something like catches you in a throw or throws you to your back and pins you, like, or throw one of those elementary school headlock and pins you. Would you consider that guy really being better than you because he pinned you, or would you consider that guy just getting a lucky throw?
No, I can't remember the last time. I know I can guarantee it's happened. It's happened to everybody. I don't know. I don't remember when it happened. I'm sure it's happened. And if you're winning 10-0 and you get pinned with 30 seconds left, I'm not going to say you won the match, but you were the better guy. You know, same thing. My dad will say, you'll hear coaches say it. The better guy doesn't always win. The guy who won the match won. So maybe that guy threw a headlock and pinned you. He might not have been the better wrestler, but he was the guy who won the match. You know what I mean? So, you know, sometimes the best guy doesn't win the tournament or the best guy doesn't win the match. But sometimes, you know, things happen. You know, that stuff happens. You know, you're at a tournament, you like back to what I was saying earlier about me and Dayton. Like, if you compete as often as some of these kids do, stuff like that might happen to you. You might be winning, you know, 5-6, 7-8-0, get thrown in a headlock and pin. And you might have been the best guy in the tournament, but you got headlocked and pinned, so that was a flaw of yours that
right.
Someone was able to exploit. So even though you might have been the best guy, you might not have deserved to win because you were able to get thrown and pinned in a headlock. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And that's especially the case, especially for, like, people like you, Spencer Lee and Nick Soriano, and it's you'll get to those tournaments where you might meet up with a guy that he knows, like, deep in the back of his mind, I'm probably not going to beat this guy. So they're going out there just to catch you, hoping that they could get a pin out of it. Like, you ever kind of had similar situations like that where you just know a guy's just trying to catch you in something?
Yeah, I mean, you'll get kids who go out there and, you know, they might not think they're the better wrestlers. So they're going to try and, you know, hit headlocks and cradles and, you know, crazy little cement mixers and stuff. And, you know, part of being a good wrestler is being able to stop big moves because, you know, part of being good is being up by 6 or 7 points and being able to control that lead. So just kind of from growing up and becoming more mature wrestler, you learn how to, you know, defend a headlock and defend cement mixers and defend cradles and stuff just from having guys trying to hit them on you, you know. So I guess part of having that success is going through that process of, you know, having guys trying to headlock you or trying to cement mixer you or trying to, you know, flying pin you or somehow. So I guess it's just kind of a learned skill. You know, you go through practice, guys try to throw a headlock on you, get in matches, you're down, you're up by 7, 8 points, guys try to throw a cement mixer on you. And it's just kind of a learned skill that you pick up. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for certain. I mean, if you're gonna be good, you're gonna have to be able to defend almost everything that comes at you. And they always say that the difference between a good wrestler and a great wrestler is what I tell the kids that I coach is that a great wrestler knows how to win a close matches. So it's always those kind of things. Here's a question that I asked Dayton Fix, and I want to get your advice on it. So and you got folk style wrestling, which is what they do in high school. If they were to take and implement the freestyle out of bounds 1 point, do you think that would kind of stop the kind of stalling where everybody's trying to play the line? Do you think that would be a good rule to implement for folk style wrestling?
I agree with it because I really like freestyle wrestling in general. And I definitely think it would avoid the whole stalling issue because now guys can't play the edge anymore because if I shove you hard enough, you're going to step out and I'm going to get a point. So, I mean, there's always going to be those kids who score 5 push-ups and get 5 points. And then, you know, someone might say, well, I got 2 takedowns, but you got 5 push-ups, but you won. But, I mean, that's part of being able to, like, control your opponent. You weren't able to keep your feet in the middle of the mat. So I definitely think the push-out rule is something that could apply to folk style well because it prevents stalling. You always get those kids who, you know, back out to the edge, take a shot, and then you go out of bounds. You can't really hit them for stalling because they're shooting on you, but they're backing out. Now those kids back out to the edge, you take a shot and shoot them out of bounds, you get a point now. You're rewarded for being an offensive wrestler. Now, it's not a perfect system. Sometimes the guy's pushing you to the edge and he steps out because the other guy circled in. But 8.5, 9 times out of 10, it's going to reward the guy who's pushing forward, who's moving forward, who's controlling the middle of the mat. So I think a push-out rule, you know, could be effective in folk style.
Yeah, I was thinking about how they would actually call it. If I was to take someone down and I get the takedown but my feet are still in, would I get a 2 plus a push-out, or would that negate the push-out and just give me the 2? I wouldn't even know how they would call that. I mean, what would you think would be the right call for that?
Freestyle wrestling's kind of figured it out where if I'm in on a shot and I pick you up and your feet step out, then it's a push-out. But, like, if I'm taking a shot and we're on our knees and we're kind of scrambling, even though your foot might go out of bounds, we're wrestling. You know, I didn't drive you out. We're just kind of scrambled over to the edge. It's kind of different. So the simplest way I can explain it is, you know, if I'm wrestling and I hand fight and I'm hand fighting you and you step out of bounds, then it would be a push-out. But if I, you know, took a shot and you sprawled and maybe I came back door or something and, like, when I slid my knees in, I stepped out, it's not a push-out because we're wrestling. We're scrambling, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, if there's a difference between me walking you out of bounds versus us wrestling out of bounds.
Oh, for sure. How good are you on a freestyle circuit? What's been your major accomplishments on a freestyle circuit?
Well, I won a cadet world title in freestyle. I would say that's probably my biggest freestyle accolade. And what's funny was when I first started, like, training freestyle, I was really bad at it, and I didn't have a good understanding for it. But between making the world team, going all those world team camps, and just really putting a lot of time into it, personally, I actually found I like it a little bit better because, you know, it's a lot of neutral wrestling. There's not as much stalling because of the push-out rule, and there's not as much, you know, time wasting on the mat. So I think freestyle wrestling favors the more technically sound wrestler because you're not going to beat me unless you take me down in a freestyle match, you know. And if maybe you hip tilt me 800 times, that means my technique wasn't clean enough. So I've come to find freestyle to be very rewarding to the better wrestler. So I like it because, you know, it rewards the guy who might deserve to win.
Well, what kind of wrestler would you say you are? Are you more of a finesse guy? Are you more of a banger? Or do you like to try to do a little bit of both?
I consider myself more of a technician than a banger. My dad always wants us to, you know, fight and be tough. And not that I don't fight and I'm not tough, but I consider I win more matches because of my technique and my ability to, you know, wrestle guys than my ability to, you know, get in a street fight. Like someone like Louis Dupre, who's a, you know, a kid I train with, and, you know, he's one of my really close friends. He's a fighter. He's going to punch you in the face for 6 minutes, and you got to just take punches. And you just got to fight for 6 minutes. And he wins a lot of matches just fighting kids and breaking kids and physically wearing people down. And then, you know, he picks up his 3, 4, 5 takedowns because you just can't even move anymore. I see myself more as a technical wrestler where I have a really wide variety of ways where I can score points, and I try to overwhelm you with my offense more than my physicality. Part of it is because I'm not a strong wrestler. I'm just not a strong person. And I think part of it is because of my, like, knowledge of wrestling that I think I can wrestle technically more than physically. Like, you know, I have a very good... I think I have a pretty good understanding of wrestling, so I consider myself more of, like, a technician than, like, a street fighting. But I still wish I could... Like, I still want to incorporate that street fighting kind of aspect into my wrestling because, you know, if the other kid just quits because I'm beating him up, you know, it's a lot easier to wrestle like a technician, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, for sure. What are your favorite, what are your go-to moves? Like, what do you like to do the most of?
I like, you know, like, I don't know, this, it's a whole series that kind of plays into itself between, you know, my cradles and my singles and my knee pulls and my throw bys. And you know, I guess I don't think I can identify one move that I'm going to wrestle and you know I'm going to hit this move. But I just kind of like getting in there and wrestling with guys. You know, like having guys get in on my legs and me wrestling with them and having me get on guys' legs or having me getting scrambles with people. I guess I like scrambling, I guess, because it's wrestling to me. To me, that's wrestling. But sitting in there and me punching you in the face is a little more of a street fight and not as much of a wrestling match. Whereas I think, you know, having guys get on my legs and me sprawling or them passing the leg or me shooting and, you know, getting to my feet, like, that's wrestling to me. And I guess, you know, maybe it's, I can't identify that, you know, a high cross or a single or a knee pull or something is my favorite move. But I just kind of like getting in scrambles and wrestling matches out with guys and, you know, being in weird positions and, you know, maybe positions that the other guy hasn't been in before but are comfortable for me. I know that's not really a definite answer, but you know what I'm saying?
No, I most definitely do understand. When you're in a scramble, what's the key to winning a good scramble? What do you want to do in a scramble position to actually come out with a takedown or a reversal?
The biggest thing for me is a lot of times, especially with young kids, when they get in scrambles, they kind of lose focus of where their body is. And, you know, they might forget where their feet are, where their hands are, where the other guy's feet are, where the other guy's hands are. And for me, the biggest thing is having good kinesthetic awareness, like being aware of where my body is and where the other guy's body is. So, you know, if I'm always aware of where his feet are going, where his feet just were, and where his feet are at the moment, then, you know, I'm going to be more likely to win because I'm able to plan, you know, 2, 3, 4 steps ahead. So, you know, especially like middle school kids, they start scrambling. They're just kind of rolling around, you know. Sometimes you'll see kids who don't really know what they're doing. They're just kind of rolling around hoping something happens. Whereas I try to be more systematic. We're like, all right, I know he's going to do this, so I'm going to do this to prevent that, and I'm going to get takedown now.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and it's funny because especially when you're coaching beginners our little kids is like they go out there and you get frustrated because you look at them and you say, dude, like you're going to your back, or you should like feel like you expect for them to be able to feel that they're in a bad position, but then you realize that they're just beginners. And it's like you tell them that shouldn't even feel right. Like you ever had like something where like you could just tell it just doesn't feel right. And you know you don't need to be there. Like, you know, you kind of know what I'm saying a little bit.
Yeah. Like, are you talking about from a coaching perspective or from a wrestler's perspective?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, I'm pretty sure you've done a little bit of coaching to help kids out. And, you know, even from a wrestling perspective, you get to going somewhere. And you're smart enough to know now because you've wrestled a long time that's just not the right place to go. It just don't feel right, you know, like.
Yeah.
You kind of understand, like, even from both perspectives, coaching and wrestling.
Yeah. Like, you can feel things, especially as a wrestler, you can feel things kind of happening as they're happening. So maybe as you're going to pass a guy's leg, you're going to sit a certain way, you realize, no, I shouldn't be doing this. So maybe you bail on it and you go back to something else. Or maybe you realize, I shouldn't be doing any of this, and you just try and get to a stalemate position or get to a restart. From a coach's perspective, you know, you might not be able to feel that, but if you have an understanding, you can see, like, they shouldn't be doing that. They shouldn't be putting their foot there. They shouldn't be stepping like that. They shouldn't be doing this thing. And, you know, I get it. You're working with young kids. But from, like, a wrestler's perspective and a coach's perspective, if you have a good enough understanding of where your body should be and how you should be moving, then you can feel things before they actually happen. You can realize, no, I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't take that shot. I shouldn't step with that foot. I shouldn't circle that way. I shouldn't sit that way. And, you know, as a coach, it's a little different because you can't make that decision for the kid. But you can still be aware of what's happening and what they should and shouldn't be doing. And eventually, you know, as a kid will be able to figure it out if they reach that level of wrestling. Or I'll be able to figure it out if I get in that situation enough. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always tell, like, beginners, just for a base for it now, I tell them when you get out there, if your opponent's trying to put you somewhere and you feel them trying to play toward that way, you probably need to try to play the other way because that's what they're trying to attack at. And it's just simple stuff like that you expect for them to know that they don't know. But on to another question I ask. Is there anything that you think you feel like you need to work on? I mean, you're very successful in your craft, but what do you feel like that you lack at?
Oh, 100%. You know, after Super 32 this weekend, you know, we had like a 13, 14-hour ride home. My dad sat me down, and he's like, all right, Jan, you know, we're going to work on these things because this is what you're not good at. And, you know, my dad, I always take things back to my dad because, you know, he's always trying to make me better. So, you know, and I'm starting to pick it up now where I can realize that's not right. I need to get better at this. To the point where I can sit down and I can say, like, I did this, this, and this wrong. What do you think? And he'll be like, yeah, that's it. And, you know, so I'm very critical of myself. My dad's very critical of me. And it's never in a way that breaks me down. It's never like, Jan, you're bad at this. Or, you know, I'm not good at, or I suck at this. It's like, I'm not good enough at this. I need to get better at this. What I do now won't work on good kids. For, say, you know, my sweep single. Say I finished that match, I'm like, my sweep single's not good enough because I couldn't take that kid down. My dad's going to sit down, and he's going to be like, all right, you need to work on this part of your sweep single. And I'm going to say, my sweep single needs to get better. I need to get better at this part of it because this part isn't working. So I never try to be content with what I'm doing because, you know, if I was the best wrestler ever, I'd pin everyone in 30 seconds, but that doesn't happen. So, you know, there's always things I can get better on.
What's been your biggest disappointment in this sport? You know, something that you just knew you could grab and, you know, you couldn't get it because you lost. Like, what's been your biggest, like, disappointing loss?
I mean, I've had a lot of disappointing losses. One of them that sticks in my head is the loss I took to Luke Pleasure, who's number one. Don't get me wrong. Luke's an amazing wrestler. He's a really great competitor, and he works really hard and all these things, but like, I remember after the match, my dad just sat me down. He's like, Jan, I can't tell you anything you did wrong. You know, I talked to the Cornell coaches. They're like, you didn't do anything wrong. You just wrestled dumb. It was one of those matches where, like, even during the match, I'm like, what am I doing? What's happening? This doesn't feel right. you know, you go back that this doesn't feel right, and it was kind of like everything felt like that. I'm not saying I deserve to win that match because I lost. I didn't deserve to win the match. But it was just one of those matches where, sitting down in hindsight, I just wanted to get that one back. I just wanted to be like, yo, I didn't do that match good. You know, Luke was better than me that day, and it was kind of – it was a little disappointing because, you know, that was my opportunity to, you know, get to wrestle guys like Luke Fletcher and Chad Red. And not to say that I deserved to win that match because I didn't. But it was one of those matches where sitting down and looking back on it, that was frustrating because it was stupid of me. I did dumb things, and Luke, being the great wrestler he is, was able to capitalize on them. And, you know, he took me down a few times to my one takedown. And I'm not going to sit here and tell everyone that I should have won or I should have been number one in the country or whatever. But it was just one of those matches where I can sit down and say, this is 100% my fault. I did this wrong. The ref didn't screw me. I wasn't too small. You know, there's no excuses. I messed up. So I guess it's kind of those kind of matches that I'd like to get back. Matches where I can firmly say I'm the sole purpose of my loss. There's no other outside factors other than me doing something wrong, stupid, inadequate. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure. For sure. What is your training like? Like, what are some things that you do in your training that have made you successful?
My dad's put a ton of emphasis on being able to wrestle hard for 6 minutes and never being uncomfortable. We spend a ton of time working on positions where people would be uncomfortable. Like, we work on, you know, getting sprawled out on your high crotch, getting sprawled out on your single, having guys in really deep on your legs, so that when I get put in those positions, I'm not uncomfortable. I've been there before. So maybe, you know, a guy's got me in the air on a double leg, but I've, you know, been there 100 times in practice, so I know how to handle it. Or maybe, you know, I take a high crotch and the guy sprawls me out and now I'm stuck. But I've been there in practice before, so I can understand where to go from there. Now, I'm not saying we only work on bad positions. Yeah, we work on finishing clean, singles and high crotches and stuff. But at the same time, we take time to look at, you know, worst-case scenarios. We take a lot of time to look at, you know, maybe the guy's going to take you down now, or maybe he's in really deep on your leg, or maybe you're getting sprawled out and you can't move now. So we try and play through every position down from the best-case scenario all the way to the worst-case scenario.
How much weight do you cut for these tournaments? What is your diet like? What are the things that you eat?
My dad cut a lot of weight when he was younger, and he's never liked me to cut a lot of weight. Now, at the same time, he's a believer that you can't have a ton of success without cutting weight because everyone cuts weight. It would be like wrestling up a weight class, basically, if you didn't cut weight. So the way my dad's always explained it to me is, like, I skip one weight class. So if I'm comfortable eating whatever I want, I'm 140 pounds, I skip 132. Or I skip 138 and go 132 if I'm eating, and, you know, but that also means that if I'm 120, I skip 113 and go 106. So now my dad doesn't want me to cut 15 pounds. That might be a little ridiculous, but at the same time, he thinks, you know, I should cut 8 to 10 pounds of just, you know, maybe the first 4 or 5 is dieting and the last, you know, 3 or 4 is dehydrating. And, you know, this way I'm never going to be small for the weight. Maybe I'm never going to be the biggest kid in the weight class, but I'm never going to be to the point where I'm ridiculously small and I should have been down a weight. Because, you know, it's part of that whole thing that I should be prepared. So it's there's a level of dedication where, like, if you don't cut weight, even though you might be a really good wrestler and you might work really hard, you're lacking that part of your dedication where you're willing to suffer and cut weight. So
for
my
sure.
dad...
I'm sorry.
Although
what were you saying?
I'm sorry. So, like, although he's never wanted my dad's never wanted me to, my focus to be, oh, I got to make weight for this, I got to make weight for that. But at the same time, it's like, you got to lose some weight because everyone is, and there's no reason you deserve not to lose weight.
I understand that. Well, when you are, like, cutting in the week before, like, a major tournament, what are certain things that you like to put in your body to keep yourself fueled to compete?
Oh, I'm sorry. I kind of skipped over that part. So, like, the way it was explained to me as a kid was like, when you're cutting weight, your body's like a machine. So you have to get it good food, you know, grilled meats, vegetables, fruit, waters, no sugar, no salt, stuff like that. And this way you're guaranteed that you're going to be hydrated and you're going to have good energy. You know, you're not, there's no waste of energy like, you know, I mean, to giving you an extreme, like you're not eating cupcakes and stuff because that's just wasted energy and fat. The purpose of eating good is to like have your body in optimal condition and be hydrated enough where if you had to lose 3 pounds in an hour, you could just drop 3 and be done. You know what I mean? So
for sure.
It's a lot of like fruits and vegetables and a lot of water and like grilled meats, stuff that is solely for energy. And, you know, stuff that would like, that, you know, would, stuff that's not processed and not covered in salt or sugar, stuff like that. And it's all, you know, natural sugars, natural salts, natural fats, stuff that like, stuff that's not been tampered with. You know what I mean?
For sure. You got basically your organic foods.
Yeah. Kind of like that.
I understand. You said that you sometimes you gotta dehydrate yourself. Do you do the whole water load and then do a Epsom salt bath? Like, how do you go? Do you do a sauna? Do you do a steam? Do you steam room sauna suit? How do you actually go about your dehydration process?
Now, this kind of depends on the person. You know, each person does it a little bit differently, but just the way my body's worked best, I've always felt best just working out, whether it's wrestling or running or riding a bike, like working out. The whole sauna, Epsom salt, steam room, you know, that works. That'll make you lose weight. But just when I do it, I've never felt good. Like if I'm going to sit in a sauna, I've got to be moving at least. Like I guess I feel best when I've been working out and I work out to get my weight down and then I rehydrate up. You know, some people probably feel better sitting in a sauna or sitting in a salt room to lose weight. But just personally, my body operates best when I work out. That's just how I'm wired. You know, it's probably different for other people.
You know, it's crazy because one of the best advices that I received from a wrestler, he was injured last season. He wrestled for Virginia Tech. He was an ACC champion. He was a national qualifier. A guy named Dennis Gustafson. He's a wrestler out of Virginia that wrestled in North Carolina. He told one of the kids that I coach, he said, When I'm in practice, I practice. I go in there and I may have sweatpants on and a t-shirt, and I get a good practice to where I'm getting the most out of it, and I'm not tired from having all the sweats on. And then after the practice, I go cut weight. What do you think about that?
That's definitely a functional idea. So I get it. The focus of that is kind of the same idea of mine. Similar, not exactly the same, but similar, where you're practicing because you want to be a good wrestler. You're not practicing because you need to make weight. He's practicing because he's going to get better at wrestling that day, and he's going to get in better shape, and then he's going to worry about making weight, you know, after. And, you know, I mean, I'm still going to – so the way that I make weight is, you know, I'm going to throw on my sweatshirt, and I'm going to work hard for – maybe it's a short, hard hour practice, and I'm just going to bust my balls for that hour. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. And then if I need to go longer after that, I'll go longer. So it's similar to what he does. Not the same, but similar. You know what I mean? I guess he's going through his practice like nothing's happening, and then he's going to cut his weight. I'm doing it where I would maybe throw on my cut and weight gear and go short and hard, you know, bust my butt for an hour, hour and a half, and then be done. You know what I mean?
For sure. Well, what do you do just to have like alone time? Like do you like to go fishing or hunting or anything, you know, when you just want to take that break from wrestling?
This probably sounds really goofy, but like, you know, when I take days off and stuff, I actually like to watch wrestling. Like I probably watch more wrestling than like regular TV. You know, it's fun for me. It's like how normal people watch football, the NFL, college football. I watch wrestling. It's just kind of fun for me. So, like, if you're trying to get away from, you know, the cutting weight and the training and stuff, like, I just like to watch wrestling for the purity of it, you know, just for watching guys going out there and competing. you know, I do other things. I hang out with my friends. I go play video games with my brothers or whatever. But for me, like, the most relaxing thing for me to do is just watch wrestling. Just hang out and watch really good wrestling, really high-quality wrestlers, and just watch them go at it. You know, it's fun for me. Like, that's just kind of what I like to do.
How do you budget or you know, be able to put time into your academics and being able to hang out and then the whole training and wrestling?
So a big part of it is my closest friends are wrestlers. So they're right there with me. You know, my closest friends who live near me are other wrestlers who train with me. So they're going through the same thing that I am. So maybe what we do is maybe I'll go home from school and I'll do my homework for 2 hours. Then I'll go to practice and I'll practice for 2 hours and it's 7:30. And now I'm around my friends. Maybe I hang out with my friends for half an hour, 45 minutes. And then I go home, eat dinner and go to bed or whatever. So I guess part of it is that my closest friends are right along with me. So, you know, they go through the same process. You know, they go home, they do their homework, they come to practice, we hang out for an hour, and then we leave. And that's just kind of the process of it. So I guess it just became a part of my daily routine where I wake up, go to school, do my homework, go to practice, hang out with my friends who also went to practice with me for an hour, and then go home. And, you know, that's it.
You know, but before we get this thing wrapped up, I got to ask you, when it's all said and done and your body's telling you that you cannot wrestle anymore, what would have been your ultimate achievement? What would you have wanted to have achieved?
I know every kid says it, but if I could have one thing as a wrestler, like one accolade that you could put under my name, I'd want to have an Olympic gold medal. It would just be like the culmination of my career. That's one thing since I was a little six-year-old kid, that if you asked me what I wanted to do as a wrestler, I'd say, win an Olympic medal. You know, win a gold medal. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, people win state titles. People win Super 32 titles. People win Division I national titles. Really legendary wrestlers win Olympic titles. Like, if you told me right now that some guy walking down the street won an Olympic gold medal in wrestling, I would think great things of that guy. I think he's a hard worker. I think, you know, he's got great talent. I think he's, you know, a dedicated person. I think all these things. And because I understand that, you know, I'm probably, like, you know, I might not be doing the work right now that is required to be a gold medalist because I might not know what that takes. But I know that to win an Olympic gold medal, you've put a lot of time in and you've sacrificed a lot. So part of it is just to have that achievement, to have that gold medal. But part of it is to, like, put that work in and, you know, have other people respect what I've done. Like, I'm not doing it so I can impress other people, but part of it is to, like, have that factor of, like, me knowing I worked for this. It's something that, like, isn't handed to me. It's not like a lottery ticket where you just kind of won on accident. It's something that you had to really put time in and you had to really give up things that might have been really important to you to do that. And it's a symbol of dedication and a symbol of suffering. And, you know, to me, that would be a really, really, like, sad. That would be the culmination of my wrestling career if I got a gold medal.
And it's funny because, like, the whole Olympics and the whole, like, Greek mythology behind it, and you being Greek, it would be actually something pretty good for you to do. But I'll tell you this, let me actually ask you this. So you have the Olympics that come around once every 4 years, but between that, you got tournaments like the UWW Worlds and World This and World That. If you're consistently winning gold medals on that circuit and you don't win an Olympic medal, couldn't you almost say, I mean, technically I'm still a world champ, or does the word Olympics take it much higher?
The way I see it, if you want to, all right, so there's the one thing I want to clarify is there's a huge difference between, like, the Cadet World Championships. That's just another stepping stone. The Men's World Championships, the Senior World Championships is really similar to an Olympic gold medal, but it just doesn't hold the same weight in not only just regular people's minds, but in wrestlers' minds, in my own mind. If you won a world gold medal, I would still say you're one of the best wrestlers in the world, if not the best wrestler in the world. You know what I mean? You want a gold medal. But just, I guess, part of the reason the Olympics are special is because they're once every 4 years. Like, if you took a world silver medal, you can say, I have next year where I'm going to work hard for the next year and win. But for to win an Olympic gold medal, that means you've dedicated 4 years since the last one. So, now, I mean, you've put your whole life into it, obviously. But the difference is that I feel like it's more significant in my brain because worlds are every non-Olympic year. So, not that it's not as big of a deal, but say I took a silver, I only have to wait one more year of training and dedication before I can get back into it. Whereas the Olympics, you know, say I'm wrestling in the 2016 Olympics and I take a silver, or I don't medal, I have to wait another 4 year circuit before I can get back out there. So there's a lot more of this kind of one shot mentality where you can wrestle in six Olympics like you can wrestle in six world championships. There's just not as much time that your body can handle. You know what I mean? So like part of the reason I think the Olympics are more significant is because it's a once every 4 year event. So, like, you know, you don't get that many chances. You only get two or three Olympic chances if you're that good and if your body can handle it for that long. So it's kind of like it's similar to a Division I national tournament if you only got one national tournament when you were in college. You know what I mean? It'd be like, this is your one shot. If you don't win it now, like, you might not be able to be wrestling in the Olympics next year because you might be too old. You might be too broken down. You might not be good enough anymore. Whereas at the Worlds, you can take it year by year by year. The Olympics, you got to wait. Like, say I didn't win an Olympic gold medal in 2016. Who knows? By the time 2020 rolls around, I might not be able to compete anymore. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's not as many opportunities.
No, I totally understand where you're coming from. And because, you know, speaking of like the, you know, as much as you compete, and we're talking about, you know, what you may not be able to do years from now. Do you feel like, do you have any like wear and tear on your body now just from just the tough competition that you wrestle? Do you feel any kind of your body kind of breaking down even though you're young?
I mean, everyone gets bumps and bruises, you know, little, like I've broken fingers and broken my nose and stuff, but I've always kind of looked past that stuff. And the way I see it, all those great guys get little injuries here and there. You know, guys break fingers, guys break their nose. Not that they're not a big deal, but it's not really a big deal relative to your wrestling career. Like, whether or not I've got a broken finger isn't going to affect my ability to win matches. So, I mean, every great, like, you can't help wrestle for, you know, this is my 10th year of wrestling and not have little injuries here and there. As well, I mean, there's a huge difference between breaking a finger and ripping your shoulder out. So, I mean, yeah, there's little wears and tears here and there, but that's kind of occupational hazard. You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of part of wrestling.
For sure. Let me ask you this. Have you ever wrestled the Division I caliber competition? Like, how have you did against – have you ever ran into, like, maybe have you might have practiced at a college or wrestling in a tournament that had D1 wrestlers show up? How have you done against those kind of people?
I wrestle at Cornell, you know, and outside of the season, you know, I train up there with those guys, and I'm not good enough yet. Like, I've wrestled with Nashawn Garrett and guys like Nashawn Garrett and Dalton Macri, who are, you know, college wrestlers who are really successful. And I can compete with them. Like, they can't just blow me over and tech me in a minute. But I'm just not as good as they are yet. I'm not as athletic. I'm not as strong. I'm not as technically good. So while I might have a lot of high school success, it's always sitting in the back of my mind that as of now, I'm just not good enough to wrestle in college. That's why I'm a junior in high school, I'm in college right now. So, I mean, every year I get a little more competitive. You know, I can wrestle with those guys a little bit more. But just right now, I'm just not good enough to be at that level yet. You know, like, I might have a lot of high school success, but there's a huge difference between winning a Super 32 title and winning a Division I national title. The level of wrestling ability and the level of strength and the level of athleticism is totally different. You know what I mean?
For sure. What's been the best advice that someone's ever given you that's helped you out?
The biggest thing for me is probably what Kyle Dake. He preaches it all the time. Is that you have to really enjoy it. Like, it's impossible to get to reach those like great. It's impossible to reach your full potential if you don't really love it. Like, you have to sit down sometimes and just think why you love wrestling so much, why you're still wrestling. Because wrestling's a sport that grinds on you, and if you don't take time to enjoy it, then it's just going to rip you apart. So part of it is just being able to, like, part of it's just being able to enjoy the process, and, you know, like, we have fun. You know, we work really hard when we're at practice, but, you know, my friends wrestle. We hang out after practice. There's some things you have to enjoy about it. There's sometimes, like things like winning Super 32, where I can sit down and I can say, you know, that was pretty cool. You know, because while I'm always looking to get better, you need to enjoy some of it. Because if you're always upset about things and you're always negative about things you've done and you're always thinking, oh, I suck, I'm not good enough, this and that, then it's going to be really hard to enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it, it's going to eat you up real quickly. You know, like, it's just going to be too overwhelming to hate what you do and do it for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to find some of the joys in it.
For sure. I would say that because you wrestle a lot of these tournaments that sometimes financially it takes a toll. Do you have sort of like what Dayton Fix has, like a GoFundMe account? Like, how do you gather the support to be able to go and travel to these tournaments?
So, I don't. I guess, not that my family's overly wealthy, but my family kind of has some money just from, like, that business that I previously mentioned that my grandpa started, and now my dad's taken over with, like, selling seafood and stuff. So, like, you know, my family lives, we're not, by no means are we upper class, you know, rich, you know, millionaires or anything.
Yeah, you're not living in a half.
Yeah, like, we're not living in, you know, New York City Capitol buildings, but, like,
yeah.
You know, we have enough money where we can live comfortably and we can go to these tournaments. And, you know, my dad works really hard when he's, you know, at work, and, you know, he makes good money and he works hard when he's there. So, you know, our family's, it's, by no means are we super rich, but we have enough money where we can go to tournaments like Super 32 and go to tournaments like Flow Nationals because of, you know, just kind of the opportunities we have and, like, the work that my dad's put in to, like, help my family live a good life.
You know, it's funny that you said, like you said, you guys drove 14 hours. So did you stay Sunday night and try to watch the All-Star Classic, or were you on the road back to New York when the All-Star Classic was on?
We drove. We couldn't. I went to school on Monday. So, yeah. Like, you know, Louis Dupre wrestled his finals match. That was at 170 pounds. We were out the door by 182, 195. Because we went, we drove home, same thing. My dad had to sacrifice a lot. He drove overnight just to get home. And, you know, Louis' dad stayed up with him to, you know, make sure we don't get an accident or something. And, you know, there's just, like, little things like that, you know. Like, part of it is, like, you know, we all make sacrifices, and that's just, like, a sacrifice my dad was willing to make for us.
Right. So did you ever go back? Did you get to see any of the All-Star Classic?
Honestly, I slept for that most of that ride. But, I watched some of the replays and stuff. Like, we sat down in my living room today and watched the matches.
For sure. One of the last questions I have for you, if somebody wanted to just follow you throughout your success, what social media networks are you on, and what are your screen names so they could follow you or Instagram you or Facebook you so you can keep them updated on you?
I have a Twitter and an Instagram. My Twitter's at Yanni Diaco, and then my Instagram's at Yanni _ Diaco. And, you know, that's kind of it for me. I'm not huge into social media. You know, I'm still fairly new to it. I haven't been on either of those websites, either of those, you know, social media networks for over a year. I just got on Twitter in February and Instagram, like, this past summer. So they're still fairly new to me, but, yeah, that's it. Those are my two things, at Yanni Diaco, at Yanni _ Diaco.
I have one last question, and this is a question that I ask a lot of people, and it really throws them off because they're not prepared for it, but it just kind of gives me a little bit more, you know, insight about you. If you could have dinner with two people, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Living or dead. I'd have to say, can they be wrestlers?
Anybody.
All right. If they could speak English, I would say, well, Dan Gable probably, and a guy from Russia who's a like art. In my opinion, he's one of the best wrestlers in the history of the sport. Bubai Sarsatiev. You ever heard of him?
Yes.
He's a Russian 74-kilo guy back in, you know, the 80s, 90s. And my dad's tried to model a lot of my technique off of him. And he's just kind of been one of those guys who I've never really known about. Like, I've never known about him personally. I've just known about his great wrestling achievements. And he's always been interesting to me because I don't really know anything about him, and he's always been really successful. I'd like to learn, same thing with Dan Gable, like what their mentality was and like where they got all their success from, and like who they would credit to their success and like what they did to reach the kind of level that they were at. Because although they were both tremendously successful, they were totally different. Dan Gable was this kind of like, you know, Energizer Bunny, never-ending energy, who just worked really hard and busted his butt. And I'd like to hear, you know, his method of what got him to greatness. And at this total, not total other side, but the other side of the spectrum was Satyev, who was this technician who knew every single move in the book, and he was so overwhelming with his technique that it was like guys just didn't know how to approach it. So I'd be interested to see where he got all that from. So I guess if I did sit down at dinner with two people, it'd be Dan Gable and Bubba Sarsatyev.
For sure. I'll tell you what, man. I know you probably got homework to do. If you don't have anything else to share, man, I'll let you go. But I do appreciate you having you on my show. You've given a lot of great insight on a lot of things, especially being in a situation, you know, that you've been in and being successful. So I appreciate you being on the show, man.
Yeah, no problem. It's fun.
Yeah, and at some point, I want to have you back on. You know, you might can help me when I'm interviewing other wrestlers. Yeah, you might help me, you know, co-host. I don't mind that because sometimes I can use one. But I'm gonna let you go, man. I appreciate you being on the show.
All right, thank you.
Thank
No
you.
problem. See you.
Everybody, that was Yanni DiHakamales. The rising junior from Hilton Central High School in the Rochester area, part of New York. What a good kid. He had a lot to say. And he's the kind of kid that I like to interview because I want you to talk. I don't want any interview that's going to start and end, you know, start and then end in 10 minutes. I want to know, you know, things about you. He wasn't scared to talk. And he told me before we went live, he's like, you know, sometimes I go on tangents. And I said, no, that's what I want you to do. I want you to talk. I want everybody to know about you. This show was allotted for 90 minutes anyway, you know, because normally we don't go that long. But hey, we went, you know, we got 10 minutes left if we would have needed it. And we didn't. I mean, he said exactly what he wanted to say, and he was very, very in depth about everything. I wish this kid nothing but the best of luck, and his career, and I look forward to watching his progress when he hits the mats at the University of Cornell. This has been another edition of Access Radio Live, and this is Ryan Hayes, and I really, really hope that you enjoyed the show.